Call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Monday, March 17th, 2014. We have not yet established a quorum, but we will begin with our bills, and we'll begin with Senator Coonan's 2236, a sales tax exemption for propane tax tanks. It is our intention to lay all the bills over that we'll be hearing this morning for further consideration. Whether we're not exactly sure where they'll be placed. If we decide to include them, how many tax bills are going to be? We don't know that yet. We do have a quorum, however, now at 9:27, and I would ask you to review the minutes from Wednesday, March 12th. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, Senator Dietzick moves approval of the minutes from Wednesday, March 12th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. So now we have before us, and the minutes are adopted. Senate File 2236, Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. What this bill does is provide a sales tax exemption for propane tanks that are at least 100 gallons. It also provides the exemption for valves and regulators that would be needed to use the propane tanks. As you can see on the revenue estimate, there's a cost there of about $450,000 in 2015, and then it goes up for the 2 years after that, $470,000 and $480,000. And this assumes, as you can see there, that for propane tank users, there's 5,500 estimated to be out there, and to replace regulators of there's 5,500 regulators that are replaced each year, and then the cost of those is about $300 per regulator. There are also about 1,225 tanks purchased for residential and farm users at a cost of about $2,000 a tank, and then it's estimated that in the next 3 years, 30 large storage tanks will be purchased, and that at a rate of about $80,000 per tank. As all of you are well aware, we've had some serious issues with propane supply and price over this past year. And as we look into the future, especially with the repurposing of the pipeline, it looks like we could be looking at some issues into the future also, even if we do get a warmer winter next year. The solution to the problem, of course, I don't think there's one thing that will solve the problem, but I think it'll be a bunch of pieces put together to solve the problem with propane supply and price. And this is just one idea that would make tanks more affordable, for the idea of increased storage, and also to give capacity to buy propane in the off-season during the summer when the prices are lower. Madam Chair, that's the bill. And I believe we were supposed to have a testifier.
Senator Coonan, I have I have the name of a Mr. Matt Hughes.
Mr. Hughes, yes.
Is he present?
I don't know if he's here.
Our schedule is a bit
right, but that's
different
fine,
this
Madam
morning
Chair.
Unusual, and I think people may be having a problem adjusting their schedules to the tax committee's agenda, although obviously we started at 8 and we're going to go, are eligible to use this time up until 10:45. Are there questions for Senator Kunin on Senate File 2236? Senator Kunin, it's just really just a very small step in addressing the cost and availability of propane, but perhaps it will take away one irritant, as it were.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And as I said, and you're right, Madam Chair, this is just one small step, but I believe it's going to take a bunch of different ideas and proposals and things happening to solve the problem. But this is just a small part of it.
Okay, seeing no further questions or comments, the chair lays over Senate File 2236. Thank you very much, Senator Kunin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Senator Senjum. Senator Senjum brings us Senate File 1883. Business biomass fuel residential customers, residential use sales, and use tax exemption. Senator Senjum, if you would explain your bill, and we do have the revenue estimate for it in the packet. Senator Senjum, welcome to the division.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. This is a bill brought to me by a constituent, albeit I don't believe he's here today. We tried to reach him over the weekend. So I'll try to carry forward. This is simply a sales and use tax exemption on biomass, and frankly kind of an extension of that going forward. As I think most of you know, most of the other fuels used in residential heating would be exempt from a sales tax, and this strives to give the same treatment to biomass. There are people that do heat with wood, pellets, things like that, and this attempts to create some equity there with respect to taxation.
The members are directed to the revenue estimate in the packets. The cost for FY15 is $2.8 million, and then similarly a slight increase over the next 2 years. Senator Senjum, where is it that fuel is not? Why is it that fuel is not taxed in November through April? Why isn't it just not taxed, period? Do you know the history of that?
Madam Chair, I do not.
I'm looking
that
at your,
myself.
The summary here.
I wonder,
I
realize
does
that
council
myself.
Have any...
I don't know
any...
Why that would be the case.
Was that a... a financial kind of thing? Well, we'll do it those months, but to keep the costs down, but costs are so minimal for heating. Some of us, during the summer months, our gas bills are just for running a dryer kind of thing, or maybe a gas stove, but the bills are very minimal. $20 or something like that.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I don't know the history of that.
Ms. Pollack, do you know? I'm just curious, that's all.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, just looking at the tax expenditure budget, there's not much on the history except that it was enacted in 1978 and then expanded in 1984 to include hot water. I don't have any more information at this time.
During that period, 1776, I know that at least we were undergoing a energy crisis at that time as well, and I'm assuming it was extending through those next couple of years. as well. We had long lines at the gas pumps on just energy. So this might have been enacted at that time relative to supply and demand and the cost being very high is what I would imagine. Any questions for Senator Senjum for Senate File 1883? Seeing none, we thank you for bringing the bill forward, and we will lay it over for further consideration at another time.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members.
You're certainly welcome. Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen brings us Senate File 2173, Animal Shelters Temporary Sales Tax Amnesty Authorization. That's a mouthful. Senator Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Top of the morning to you and the members.
Indeed. Happy Patrick, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, absolutely. 2173, Senate File 2173 is a, as you said, Madam Chair, a sales tax amnesty to nonprofit organizations that are involved in rescuing and sheltering and finding homes for unwanted animals. And they have to be, as I said, a 501c3. They have to register and begin collecting the sales and use tax within 4 months of this enactment. This amnesty applies to organizations that are currently not registered to collect the sales tax or to organizations that are currently under audit if the audit is not yet finally resolved. So basically, Madam Chair and members, what's happened, and this happened in Brown County actually, is they didn't realize that they were supposed to be collecting sales tax for these shelters. So they have a penalty of $7,000. That includes the tax and the penalty, and then their lawyer fees are $5,000. So they're up to a $12,000 bill for something that they really didn't know they were supposed to be collecting. And when you look at the shelters, they collect about $75 to adopt an animal and has to have its shots and do clot and has to, you know, maybe be neutered. And there is really no profit at all in this in this business that they are of sheltering these animals. So we're hoping that we can put a four-month amnesty on this, and then they can start collecting their sales tax. But we have to make sure that all the animal shelters realize that they have to. This came from the House, and my House member called 10 shelters in the area, and none of them knew they were supposed to be collecting sales tax. So we're trying to avoid an audit and a penalty for these shelters.
So, Senator Rosen, what would happen going forward right now, the bill, the section would be effective the day following the passage of this bill or a tax bill or whatever, is that the shelter that is currently under audit, it would be resolved. The result would be no taxes owed.
Exactly.
And then for the next 4 months, so let's say from June, July, August, and September, there would be some sort of notice to shelters that if they haven't been collecting the tax, they'll need to start as of September 1.
Right.
Is that, I mean,
four
I'm trying to get
the,
yeah, whatever
sure.
it is. I'm just saying,
right.
Let's say June 1. And then following that, all those shelters engaged in this activity would be required to charge sales tax. And if they don't, then they could be brought on an audit and made and required to pay. Is that how you envision this working?
Madam Chair, that's exactly right. I think that, number one, the issue is they did not realize there was sales tax that should have been charged. And number two of this bill, we're trying to avoid any unnecessary charges to these shelters that are absolutely serve a great purpose. So we're trying to set up a system to give them amnesty going forward and then allow them to start collecting the sales tax without penalties.
Does your bill provide, Senator Rosen, for how these animal shelters are going to be notified if that they're not collecting sales tax? Do you have any idea how that's going to happen?
Madam Chair, I would assume it...
Other than word of mouth.
I would assume there should be a notice from the department to any nonprofit organization or 501c3 that there is going to be a notification, you know, through the mail, you will be charging, and this is... But the bill
but
does
But the
not.
Department, I would think, would claim right now that they owe the tax, so we're just saying there's a period in which you don't have to collect it, but I just, you know, I wouldn't want us to have to come back and say, well, some people didn't find out and they didn't do it, and
right.
even during the amnesty and so forth, they and then they come in and ask for relief next year. I wouldn't want that to happen.
Madam Chair, that's a very good point, and I think then we'd be back to where we are again.
Right.
So perhaps with the help of counsel, we could put something in the language that would include the department must notify.
Animal shelters? Nonprofit animal shelters. That's all it applies to, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm. And
I wonder what kind of cost that would have. I wonder, Ms. Starr, would you come up and talk to us about what happens when a bill such as this sets up some sort of amnesty period? Is it the responsibility of the taxpayer to find out about that and start collecting the tax, or and of course those that are paying it now need to keep paying it,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you're not telling people that for the next 4 months they don't have to pay it if they don't have to collect and remit it if they have been doing it, are you?
Madam Chair, I believe I am. I believe we're giving a four-month amnesty to get everybody up to the same level.
Why would you not want people who are currently following the law to continue following the law?
Because counsel, can you help me with that as far as does the language include a remission or to allow the ones
I'm
that
not,
are collecting
sales
tax?
I'm not unsympathetic, Senator Rosen.
No,
I just
want
to make sure we don't then create non-payers of people who are already following the law as opposed to forgiving those that didn't understand that they were supposed to.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I think that question is addressed on the last three lines of the language at the very end of line 1.18. The amnesty is not available for sales and use taxes already paid or remitted to the state or already collected by the seller. So it would only apply to those who have not paid and are required to, or who are undergoing an audit that's not finally resolved.
Right.
But Ms. Pollack, would that sentence allow those who have been paying a four-month window of not paying?
Madam Chair, no, it would not.
It would not. Okay. So you've dealt with that, Senator Rosa. There you go. Ms. Starr, would you comment on this bill, please, and the procedures that the department usually follows if there's any kind of amnesty undertaken as a policy, and if you'd identify yourself for the record?
Madam Chair, my name is Jenny Starr. I'm the Senior Manager for Tax Policy at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. To your question about notice, I do think that the department is concerned about how we would find all of these organizations and how we would make sure that everyone receives notice. Even with our best efforts, I suspect that we will miss some of these organizations are very small and they're throughout the state of Minnesota. I would worry that we would miss some of them, but certainly we would make our best efforts.
Just as a general policy that you would do that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when laws change, the department certainly has procedures immediately after session to try and inform as many taxpayers as possible of the laws changes that impact them. I would also draw the committee's attention, just for your own information, that the department does have a voluntary compliance program that allows taxpayers to come forward if if they find out that they are supposed to be collecting and remitting sales tax and they haven't been, they can come forward without risk of flagging an audit and work with the department anonymously to come to an agreement on how to resolve unpaid tax and to get registered and move forward with voluntary compliance into the future. And we would certainly welcome animal shelters in this position to contact us anonymously if they would like. And we'd be happy to work with them through the voluntary compliance program that we already have in place.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are 212 animal protection and welfare service organizations in Minnesota that are registered as a nonprofit entity with the IRS. And, you know, I understand the voluntary compliance, but if you don't even know, realize that you're supposed to be collecting sales tax, and all of a sudden you get a $12,000 bill for compliance, I think there's a sweet spot here that we haven't realized yet. And they will be collecting sales tax, so this, I know the revenue impact is unknown, but there is probably a, on the front end some responsibility from revenue to make sure that everyone understands you know, their responsibilities. But going forward, I would assume there's going to be some revenue coming in.
Yes.
And that's why we have an unknown fiscal note.
Okay. We'll take that the bill under advisement. Are there any other questions or comments for Senator Rosen? Senator Rosen, thank you for bringing the bill to the Tax Committee, and we'll lay it over for further consideration. We do understand that...
thank you, Madam Chair. Members.
Thank you very much, Senator Hughes. We do understand that Mr. Hughes is here now and would like to give some comments about Senate File 2236, Senator Coonan's bill. So, Mr. Hughes, if you want to come forward. Mr. Hughes is the Minnesota Imagining Director of the Cooperative Network. Mr. Hughes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having me here today. Sorry about the mix-up. I didn't get the notice.
That's quite all right. It's a little bit unusual week for everyone.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for allowing me to testify today in favor of Senate
File. You need to identify yourself for the record.
Sorry. Matt Hughes, Minnesota Managing Director for Cooperative Network.
Thank you very much.
I'm testifying in favor of Senate File 2236 today. Cooperative Network is a two-state trade association of member-owned not-for-profit businesses in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Our broad membership also includes many of those in the propane business. Minnesota, by the way, is the number one cooperative state in the nation, and Wisconsin is the second. We have been and continue to work with Representative Anderson and Senator Coonan on a bipartisan effort to encourage and incentivize the increase of propane infrastructure in Minnesota. As you know, crop drying demand and the extreme cold weather contributed to that shortage this year. These stresses were compounded by the three-week shutdown of the Cochin pipeline in preparation for permanent reversal that exacerbated the problem. Cooperative Network, on behalf of its members, has been involved from the very beginning, from several solution-oriented meetings with the governor, Senator Franken, and others, strategic discussions with legislators, staff, and the Dayton administration, and also staff from the congressional delegation as well. A letter was sent to the congressional delegation ahead of their request for assistance from the Obama administration, and we also requested for the Dayton administration to engage in discussions with the railroads. Finally, it's important to note that we've had posted on our website for some time a list of emergency resources for both propane consumers and suppliers affected by the shortage on our website, www.cooperativenetwork.coop. Much has been done to address the situation, especially in the short term, and we're grateful for all involved for that, including providing hours of service relief and providing financial assistance to those in need. But this is a long-term situation as well. The Cochin Pipeline will permanently cease propane service after April of 2014. The pipeline provides 40% of the propane used in Minnesota. Cooperatives are working to assure that their customers will have a reliable source of propane in the future. Increasing storage at all stages of the supply chain will be necessary to offset the loss of the Cochin Pipeline. This legislation is a step in the right direction. It encourages investment in infrastructure for storage of propane at the consumer level. We intend to continue to work with Representative Anderson and Senator Coonan and others as this legislation moves forward. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hughes. Senator Coonan has already presented the bill, and we have laid it over for additional consideration. But are there any questions or comments from members, further comments or comments or questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very much
thank
for
you,
being with us this morning. Next, we have Senator Dames. I'm sorry. Senator Dames, we were taking people in order in which they had come in the room, and Senator Franzen has been here for a while, so we're going to take her bill first, and then we'll move right to yours. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Senator Franzen brings us Senate File 2008, a sales tax exemption for bullion coin. And the there is an amendment, and the revenue estimate is drawn to the amendment. Senator Franzen, would you like for us to move the A1 amendment?
Please, Madam Chair.
Senator Dietzig moves the A1 amendment. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 2008 as amended before us. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is a simple tax, sales tax exemption for bullion coin purchases. And the need to pass this bill is twofold. First, 30 other states already exempt the purchase of bullion coins from their sales tax, and 5 other states are considering an exemption. There's a map of these states in your packets. Because of this sales tax, most Minnesotans who wish to invest in precious metals purchase out of state, so there's very little sales tax collected on those purchases in Minnesota. Imagine losing 7.275% of your investment upon completion of your investment transaction. That's what currently is happening today. Secondly, because the Minnesota sales tax provides an incentive to purchase out of state, Minnesota consumers are more likely to fall prey of unscrupulous firms who will either upsell them to a product they didn't intend to purchase, or they may be a victim of outright fraud. As you may recall, last year we passed a bill to regulate coin dealers. It is much easier to enforce consumer protection on transactions in Minnesota than those transactions done with out-of-state dealers. I'd like to turn it over to Gary Atkins from Gary Atkins Associates to tell you more about the benefits of this bill.
Good morning, Mr. Atkins. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record, we would welcome your testimony on Senate File 2008. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Gary Atkins, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today about eliminating sales tax on precious metals purchases. And you might, basically, precious metals purchases, you're investing in something that it's a commodity, and it's essentially the same or substantially the same as a transaction if you're buying stocks, bonds, or any other investment. So you might ask yourself the question, why do consumers buy precious metals? And I have a quick example of that for you here today. It's a 1927 $20 gold piece that contains about an ounce of gold. And I have a $20 bill from 1927 as well. In 1927, either of these would have purchased a very nice quality suit. Today, with gold at $1,350 an ounce, this same gold piece would purchase 3 very nice suits. The $20 bill, you'd be lucky to get a necktie. So that's kind of a quick example of why people invest in gold and silver and precious metals. As Senator Franzen said, right now there are 30 other states, and that map is in your packet. But as you can see, all the states surrounding us, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin is currently considering legislation as well. We'd be surrounded by states that do not have a sales tax on precious metals. 30 other states currently have it, and there are 5 that are considering it. Also, as Senator Franzen mentioned, this is a big consumer protection issue from the standpoint of forcing consumers, in a sense, to buy from out-of-state dealers, and they're subject to fraud. And 50%. Last year, and the testimony from the Attorney General's office about and reason they created this bullion dealer regulations was because they were getting a lot of complaints from consumers. And 50% of those complaints came from out-of-state dealers. And typically what happens, if you've seen the advertising online, on TV, radio, there's a lot of these larger companies that are offering gold and silver to investors, and they do what's called upselling. So a consumer may call a firm in California, for example, in order to save the sales tax to buy precious metals, and they just want to buy bullion gold coins, and they're upsold to a product that the company can make 30, 40, 50% on. So, and that's what happened in a lot of instances, and that's why the dealer regulations came about. The regulations, I didn't realize it till this morning driving in here, I was thinking about it, but the regulations on coin dealers now makes Minnesota, if we were to exempt sales tax on precious metals, makes Minnesota the only state in the country that has licensing requirements for dealers and gives that consumer protection aspect to it. So I think that's a real important aspect of this. I know your package show that the tax revenue created from this, I think for next year was like $200,000 or $400,000 and 50% of that was estimated to be coming from precious metals. We believe that figure is much lower because most consumers are not going to pay 7.25% on top of their investment. They can do a lot of other investments, but if they want to buy precious metals, that money is currently going out of state. And we're estimating that that's a minimum of $50 million and probably more like $150 million of revenue that's actually leaving the state and going to other states to buy precious metals. We would like to keep that in state and help businesses here in state and economic growth in Minnesota. We feel that'll be a big component of it. And we also think that it'll create a lot of income tax revenue as well. So, but the consumer protection aspects of it is a big factor. About a week or 10 days ago, there was a firm in California that was not delivering product. They got into trouble. They weren't delivering product to consumers, and they had about $300 million worth of consumers' money and were not delivering product. They filed bankruptcy, and consumers are basically left to themselves to try to get some remediation on that. So another big aspect of this is convention business. The Minnesota is losing a lot of convention business because conventions won't come here because of the sales tax. Right now, there's a letter in your packet from the Minnesota Convention Bureau stating that they would love to have the American Numismatic Association, that's the largest collector and investor organization in the United States, come to Minnesota in 2016. If this law is passed, we're virtually guaranteed they will come here. That will bring $10 to $12 million worth of revenue to the state, and that's just one convention. We bring that one, we'll get some of the smaller ones as well. We're estimating that could be another $3 to $5 million in revenue to the state. So it's kind of a win-win situation for everybody on this thing, consumers, dealers, the state itself. So thank you very much for your attention.
Are there questions or comments for either Mr. Atkins or Senator Francis? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're not making the argument, are you, that this is currency and that we're taxing currency, are you?
No, not essentially, but all of the current gold bullion coins, for example, that they're produced by the United States Mint are monetized. In other words, a one-ounce gold coin has a $50 face value. So in a sense, it is guaranteed by the U.S. government as currency. So if you're buying, and most other precious metals produced by Canada and other countries are monetized in some fashion.
Senator Ortman?
But not all of the items that would be exempted from the sales tax are monetized or acting as currency or accepted as currency.
Well, things like, for example, if you bought a 100-ounce bar of silver, that's not a monetized item. That's just strictly a bullion product.
Right.
Yes.
And, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Ortman?
My concern is that would be true with respect to any purchase on the Internet. Every Minnesotan is at risk of making a purchase on the Internet, having their credit card number processed, and then not receiving the goods. So I'm trying to find where your niche is, why we should do this for this group of purchases and goods rather than others. And I haven't heard that part yet, and so I'm hoping that you or Senator Franzen will explain why we should carve this particular piece out, other than it'd be good for conventions. That's true for a lot of things that have to have sales taxes imposed in Minnesota, or consumer fraud, because that could happen to anybody buying anything on the Internet. If there's some other reason I'd like to know what that is.
I share Senator Ortman's question and curiosity about this. Mr. Atkins or Senator Franson, your response?
Yeah, I think, you know, I understand your thought about that. And, you know, the big thing here, again, is the fact that dealers in Minnesota are regulated, and throughout the country, the Federal Trade Commission regulates coin dealers. By bringing this into Minnesota and giving the option to Minnesotans, for example, you give them the opportunity to have a face-to-face relationship with a dealer in-state, somebody that they can walk into an office, purchase precious metals, take delivery of it right there, and walk away with their product. It's not like buying on the Internet. That can be, as you said, that could be a dangerous situation just like anything else.
Any further comments or questions? Mr. Wilkin, did you want to comment? Welcome to the committee, the division, if you identify yourself, please.
Madam Chair, Senators Tim Wilkin representing Gary Atkins and Associates. One of the key things that I think needs to be pointed out is that if you want to buy bullion coins, there's several different ways you can do it. You can buy a futures contract or you can buy an ETF, and those are tax exempt. And so what we're doing is driving those kind of transactions outside the state, so we're not getting the opportunity to tax them anyway. So this would just equalize that, and you can see it on the chart.
This chart is in your packet as well, and chart kind of illustrates what that difference is that the consumer is paying right now if they're buying precious metals.
Mr. Wilkin, any further comment?
Yep, Madam Chair, essentially you're in the hole. If you're buying a given amount of gold, if you buy a futures contract, you can actually take delivery of that gold, physical gold, at the end of the contract. If you buy out of state, you can take delivery of that gold. But if you buy in state, you're in a hole. It's a 7.275% penalty, and you're in the hole right away. So no sane investor is going to buy in Minnesota.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair and Mr. Wilkin, I appreciate your testimony. What you're saying is that because of our high tax rate here in Minnesota and because there isn't an exemption for these kinds of purchases, Minnesotans are being harmed because if they want to engage in these kinds of purchases, they are at a competitive disadvantage to others in other states. Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, essentially, it's a penalty, and you don't want to lose 7%+ on your investment right at the end of the transaction.
Madam Chair, I think that helps. I mean, it helps me to understand that what we're saying is the market is essentially not of use to Minnesotans because they lose money to invest in this kind of venture, where in states with non-sales taxes imposed on these types of transactions, they have a financial advantage over Minnesotans who engage in the same kinds of purchases. I think that's your best argument. It's better than your convention argument. And I mean, I think that's your best argument.
Senator Franson, maybe you need to get Senator Ortman on your bill.
Love to, Madam Chair.
Any further comments? Seeing none, the chair will lay over Senate File 2008 as amended for additional consideration. Senator Dames. Senator Dames brings us Senate File 2120, sales tax exemption for donated materials for a library expansion. And we have a revised revenue estimate that is based not on an amendment, but on additional, it is based on an amendment, but it also includes additional information. So we do have the 2120 before us. We do have an author's amendment. Senator Eaton moves Senate File 2120, the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is before us. And so we have before us Senate File 2120, as amended, and the revenue estimate that reflects the amendment and whatever additional information has been provided. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm here to present Senate File Number 2120, which is a request for sales tax exemption for the library located in Marshall, Minnesota. We have a situation too where the foundation of a contractor is going to do this project, and the foundation is going to be donating the entire cost of the project to the library. The cost of that project is about $2.2 million. The cost of materials is about $1.1 million. So the sales tax exemption spread out over the two-year period would be about $76,000. Resources and Arts Fund. As I look through the bill, and it just brought to my attention to the testifier that I have here today, it shows on the bill that this construction is in addition to a county library facility. Actually, the city of Marshall owns the building, but they have a joint powers agreement for usage of the building between the county and city. So, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if it would be in order to have an oral amendment to change that from the county to a city library?
Ms. Pollack, on line 1.9, can you offer Senator Dames' suggestion?
Madam Chair, Senator Dames, the amendment would be to delete, on line 1.9, delete the word county and insert city.
Senator Dames, would that be then more accurate?
Correct.
So Senator Eaton moves to, on line 1.9, to strike the word county and insert city. That's also an author's amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Dames, explain the need for this bill.
That's, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today I have with me Al Cruz. Al is the president of the Library Foundation. And so I'll turn it over to Al to make some comments. And also there was a handout that I believe you have received. So, Al.
Mr. Cruz, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record. We welcome your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Al Cruz. I am president of the Marshall Lyon County Library Foundation. It's a mouthful. Going back a little bit in history.
So it is not a county library, though.
The city owns the building. It is a joint powers agreement, so it's a city-county library, but it's the city owns the building. And then it's a one-third, two-thirds agreement for funding of the library for operations. The city puts in two-thirds and the county puts in one-third.
Okay, I'm asking for that clarification because, Ms. Starr, on the revenue estimate, the word county is there too. So you might want to revise it to either reflect that this is a joint powers district or that it indeed is a city library, whatever the department, you know, chooses. It's not just simply a county library. So as we've made that amendment to the bill, just to avoid confusion, you might want to just modify the revenue estimate to provide for that. Is that okay? Okay. Proceed, please.
Okay, Madam Chair, fellow senators. There is a long history of joint powers agreement between Lyon County and the Marshall Library. It goes back over 50 years. In 2005, Mr. Carr and his wife came forward and donated $2 million to construct a new library in Marshall. And his construction company bid on the project and built the library, but we weren't able to raise enough money to build the complete library. We took the children's wing off and to save money and get the building constructed. This last December, Robert L. and Phyllis Carr came forward again and said that they would donate the building if we provided the materials to go inside, the shelving and the books and the carpet and whatever. And so we have a contract between them and the city of Marshall for them to construct a 6,000-foot children's wing and a 2,300-square-foot reading court next to it. And it's quite a nice donation to the city, but we feel that it would be also be nice if, being this is donated, it's not something that he's constructing for himself, that it would be exempt from the sales tax on the materials to build this library.
So it is Senator Dames, and sir, are you asking for an exemption on sales tax for the construction materials or the materials that are used to, you know, bring the library to life with the books and the shelving? I'm not quite clear about that.
The books and the shelving will be purchased by the foundation, so they will be purchased by the city, so they would be exempt from sales tax.
Anyway. So this is for
construction materials. And
for the construction materials. And that is indeed, it says building materials and supplies. What is that, Ms. Pollack, is that usually the term that we would use here to include supplies? And what do we mean by supplies usually? Is that nails, that kind of thing?
Madam Chair, I know that supplies is a term that is used in other construction exemptions. I'd have to check and see exactly what that would encompass.
But material, Ms. Pollack, but materials and supplies is a common phrase. That's what I'm really
correct,
asking.
Correct, Madam Chair. And the, yes, correct.
Okay. Are there further questions for Senator Dames or Mr. Cruz? You have wonderful benefactors for your city and for the children and the library
very
patrons.
Much.
I'm you're very lucky.
Yes, we are.
Any other comments? Okay, well then we will lay Senate File 2120 as amended over for additional consideration.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay. So the last two bills are mine, and so I'm going to turn over the gavel to Senator Cronin. Where's the gavel?
Okay, Senator Ress, did you want to start with the first?
I'll start with 2385, and I'm going to ask the people who are interested in testifying on this to come forward. It does deal with interest rate payments on delinquent property taxes and some proposed changes. There is, in your packet, the A1 amendment, which is a delete everything amendments and author's amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'd move that at this time.
Okay. Senator Ress moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, the amended bill now does make some changes in the interest rate when people are paying delinquent property taxes if they have entered into confessions of judgment. It's effective January 1 of 2015 currently, and the I would direct you to the Minnesota Department of Revenue's revenue estimate. There are no impacts on the general fund, according to the Department of Revenue. The bill would, if you look at the detail, reduce the amount of interest that's distributed to schools and local governments. The lower school penalties would reduce an offset to state aids that would increase state costs. The current law is described in the explanation of the bill, and there's also a handout that I believe members have that is a bullet point description of the bill. And once again, we're trying, it's a proposal that we hope will support more homeowners to be able to stay in their homes by saving their homes from tax forfeiture. So I will just call on the testifiers, beginning with Mr. Elwood. And I know that there are concerns from local governments, and we'll hopefully can work with them to resolve any issues that they have.
Okay, welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. First of all, I want to thank Senator Rist for bringing the bill forward, and also I'd like to thank Senator Thompson for co-authoring the bill. Appreciate it very much. As Senator Rist said, this is a bill that's intended to try to help more homeowners stay in their homes by avoiding tax forfeiture. The interest rate on defaulting property taxes is set at a floor of 10%. And as you'll hear a very brief story from my colleague at Legal Aid in a second, illustrating the problem where we've seen a number of cases where the high interest rate has been a barrier for people completing the agreements and actually paying off the taxes and the result, of course, is they lose their home. I'd like to point out that on page 2.6, line 2.6 of the Delete All Amendment, we're only talking about primary homesteads. And essentially what we do here is cut the rate pretty much in half. It goes from 10% floor to either 5% or the greater of 2% over prime. And I'd also like to point out on line 2.14 that in case of a default of that agreement, the interest rate does go back to the original. There is an exemption on line 2.30 for repurchase agreements and contracts for repurchase of properties. So we're pretty narrowly focused here. And before I turn it over, just like to stand for questions, I'd like to also just recognize and thank very, very much the Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Intercounty Association, Metro Cities, and especially the Department of Revenue, all of whom worked with us very closely to get this language to where it is and given us technical assistance, and we're most grateful to all those parties. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Elwood?
Okay. Otherwise, I'd just like to ask my colleague Luke Grunman, a staff attorney at Legal Aid from in Minneapolis, to just give a story of one client story that illustrates the reason we're here before you today.
Well, welcome to the committee, Mr. Grunman, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Luke Grunman, staff attorney, Legal Aid in Minneapolis. And I'd also like to thank Senator Rist and Senator Thompson for the opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill. And I think what I can be most helpful is to tell you about one of my clients who's experienced tax forfeiture and the problems that she's had and how this bill could potentially help people like her. My client is a widow. She lives in Brooklyn Park. She's in her 60s. She was forced to retire early so that she could spend her time caring for her son, who has significant disabilities, and also for her 10-year-old grandson. Through hard work and a lot of time, she had paid off her home mortgage on her home completely. It's a good thing that she did. Without her employment income, she has to keep the family going through a combination of Social Security and food support. Her very low housing costs, since she had paid off her mortgage, made that possible. But in 2006, she fell behind on her property taxes, just had other household expenses and couldn't pay them. employees at the County Delinquent Tax Department did everything they could to help her apply for a repayment plan called a confession of judgment at issue in the bill today. And she did everything she could to make those payments each year, but she just couldn't do them. Last December, she missed her first property tax payment on her confession of judgment and now faces the potential loss of her home. That story should have a good, happy ending. Legal Aid has ongoing representation of her, but only because she happens to turn 65 this year, and that way we can apply for a special program that can have her have the property taxes deferred. But that program affects a very small number of people. The reason she couldn't make the payments in large part was because of the large interest rate. Each year she'd make her ongoing property tax payments and as much as she could toward the confession of judgment, but the large interest rate just forced her to get further and further behind. I'm happy to answer any questions about her story. She would have been happy to come and testify herself. She's a little bit shy and has other obligations in her life, but she wanted me to thank you on her behalf if this bill could possibly get passed. Thank you very much.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Grundman?
Chairman, I understand that whatever concerns a county had have been resolved, so there's no question about whether this can work.
Okay, anything further? And this bill should be laid over? Senator?
Yes, sir.
Senate file 2385 is laid over for further consideration.
Yes,
as amendment. Thank you. Okay, we have before us Senator Ress bill, Senate file 1842.
Mr. Chairman, in the 2013 tax bill, we dealt with expanding the base to deal with digital goods. But in the midst of that conversation, we were very clear in that goods that were otherwise untaxable for one other reason or another, one reason or another, shouldn't be taxable simply because of the way in which they were delivered. And so, for example, we made a specific exemption in the bill that textbooks at colleges and universities, et cetera, that would be otherwise exempt from the sales tax because they were sold directly by the university or college through the university or college bookstore, that those same products in digital form would not be taxed. What we did not address was similar situations in the business world with regard to continuing professional education. And so we have been working during the interim to clarify that a similar situation would not result in a taxable event. So to that end, we have this bill in front of us. And before we go any further, I would offer the A1 amendment, which is the unauthorized amendment.
Okay. Senator Rest moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we think we have the language locked down now. And it would be an effective date again for the coming year. There is no cost, according to the revenue estimate. And we think it, once again, establishes a level playing field with regard to the presentation of materials. I see that there's an A2 amendment in my packet. Is that the one we should have adopted?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, the A2 contains the same provision as in the A1, but an additional provision as well.
Ms. Pollack, could you tell us what that additional provision is, and maybe we can just add it?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Russ, the A2 contains two additional sections to allow a sales tax exemption for fundraising sales for nonprofit groups.
Yes.
And increases the threshold for the amount of fundraising that's done from $10,000 to $20,000.
Right. I'm sorry. I'd forgotten about that that provision. So, Mr. Chairman, what is a way that we can set aside the A1 amendment and take up the A2 amendment? Give me a suggestion here. I think if I just move to reconsider the action by which the A1 amendment was adopted, then we can get rid of that and then have the A2 in front of us.
Madam Chair, I'm being told we can just adopt the A2 and it'll cover the A1.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, then I move the A2 amendment.
And do members have... Oh, here we go.
It's also an author's amendment then.
Senator Ress moves the A2 amendment, and we'll vote as soon as members have the copy. Okay, all in favor of the A2 amendment, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
And, Mr. Chairman, the those other two sections do deal with another sales tax situation that are not about digital goods, but let's hear about digital, the delivery of digital educational materials first, and this creation of a level playing field. And Mr. Fragnito is with us. And Ms. McGann from the
State Bar Association.
From the State Bar Association, who want this bill.
Okay, Mr. Fragnito, and correct my pronunciation if I got it wrong, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito, and you did have the pronunciation correct. I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society, and we want to thank Senator Rest for bringing this bill forward. It does, in our opinion, create a uniform application of the tax law to the digital goods. Right now, the way that it's interpreted is there's the potential that you could have these same product taxed two different ways depending on the way in which it was consumed. We offer a number of continuing education classes for certified public accountants, and under the current situation, if you take a class in our classroom facility at our office in Bloomington, that is not considered a taxable transaction. But if you are sitting in your office streaming that same presentation, that would be considered taxable. So you could have the same class, two different individuals, one paying tax, one not paying tax. And we believe that a uniform application of the tax law prevents unintended compliance issues and makes it simpler for people to understand what they're supposed to do.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Fragnito? Okay, thank you. And Ms., again, if I'm not pronouncing this right, I didn't quite hear, but Ms. McGann?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. And identify yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Emily McGann, and I represent the Minnesota State Bar Association, which is an association of over 16,000 lawyers and other legal professionals. I'd also like to thank Senator Rest for her willingness to carry this proposal to clarify the intent of the legislature concerning the sales tax on digital goods. This issue is a legislative priority for the MSBA, as well as for our sister organization, MNCLE, who provides continuing legal education for attorneys in Minnesota. I, again, would echo Mr. Fragnito's comments regarding uniform application of tax, and I would stand for any questions if there are any.
Okay, questions from members? Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, just to, I think that ends the discussion of the digital goods, and just to refer members to sections 2 and 3 now of the A2 amendment. We were approached by a number of nonprofit organizations that carry out activities such as those listed on page 3 on paragraph D. auctions, bake sales, ice cream socials, block parties, carnivals, competitions. I think they hope that the list is exhaustive, but it gives you an idea. These are things that activities that are carried out primarily by school and community booster clubs, if you will, and they are delineating what kinds of activities would come under this exemption. It already exists, but they're just making sure, clarifying what it is that's included, and then the operative line is that the exemption amount itself is being increased from $10,000 to $20,000. I'm not sure, and maybe either Ms. McQuay or Ms. Pollock can tell us when the $10,000 limit was put into place to indicate about why we're now proposing a doubling of that before these groups would end up having to pay collect and remit sales tax.
Ms. Pollock.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, 1985.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pollock. So it's been almost 30 years since this that amount was changed, so I don't think it's unduly generous, if you will, to raise that amount by doubling. And there's been an informal, Ms. McQuay, I don't have that piece of paper with me. I left it at the desk. An informal estimate of what that would cost, and she's bringing it to me. Neglected to put it inside my folder. Informally, that would be for 2015, raising that threshold for nonprofit fundraising to $170,000. Fairly modest cost for all the for all those activities that go on throughout the state.
Okay. Anything further from the committee? Okay, Senator Est.
Mr. Chairman, then I would request that you lay over Senate File 1842 as amended for additional consideration.
Okay. Senate File Senator Est Bill Senate File 1842. Is as amended is laid over for further consideration.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I wonder, Schaefer-Pellinen, can you inform the division of what the schedule is for the rest of the week?
Ms. Schaefer-Pellinen.
We have no further division meetings scheduled.
Okay, there are no further division meetings, and the full committee is meeting on Tuesday, help me out here, Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, all 3 days, is that correct? Just so we keep getting that in people's minds in case this is our first deadline week. The tax committee's not really bound by that, but we are moving forward on a major bill. So.
And Senator Rest, just a reminder for everyone that tomorrow's full tax meeting begins
8 o'clock.
At 8 a.m.
Yes.
Right.
So I guess we're meeting on those 3 days tomorrow in particular. It's at 8 o'clock. And with that, Mr. Chairman, you can adjourn the committee.
Okay. With nothing further, we're adjourned.